Let's continue reading verses 38 through 50 of Matthew chapter 12. Now in this last portion of the chapter, the Lord announced his coming death and resurrection. He also predicted the return of idolatry to Israel in the future, and he proclaimed that all believers were included in the family of God. Let's read verses 38 through 42. Matthew chapter 12, beginning now at verse 38. Then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered, saying, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you." But he answered and said to them, "An evil and adulterous generation seeks after a sign, and no sign will be given to it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. The men of Nineveh will rise up in the judgment with this generation and condemn it, because they repented at the preaching of Jonah. And indeed, a greater than Jonah is here. The queen of the south will rise up in the judgment with this generation and condemn it, for she came from the ends of the earth to hear the wisdom of Solomon. And indeed, a greater than Solomon is here." Once again, let's consider a few background notes. The nation of Israel at this point in the Gospel of Matthew was fast approaching the point of no return. The scribes and Pharisees, who should have been the spiritual leaders of the people, had the nerve to ask the Lord for a sign of his messiahship. Verse 38, then some of the scribes and Pharisees answered, saying, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you." Incredible. What unbelief. Think of all the wondrous miracles that they had seen and heard about, and yet they have the audacity to ask for a sign. Incredible unbelief. The Lord said that an evil and adulterous generation seeks for a sign. Another indication that Israel was being set aside because they had rejected their king and his offer of the kingdom. They were an evil and adulterous generation. That is, an unfaithful nation. The Lord said that the only sign that would be given to them was the sign of the prophet Jonah, namely the Lord's death and resurrection. And by then it would be too late for them as a nation to receive their Messiah. In fact, the people of Nineveh, who repented at the preaching of Jonah, and the Queen of Sheba, who traveled a great distance to hear the wisdom that God had given to Solomon, these Gentiles would stand up in the final judgment and show just cause for the condemnation of this unbelieving generation of Israel. Why? Because something greater than Jonah, verse 41, and something greater than Solomon, verse 42, was here. Now, the something in both verses 41 and 42 is in the neuter gender. What was that something? The king and his offer of the kingdom. The nation of Israel stood condemned and would be set aside to make way for the church because the king and his offer of the kingdom were rejected. So much for background. Let's move now to our doctrinal or teaching points for this last portion of Matthew chapter 12. We have three doctrinal points. Doctrinal point number one. The Lord pronounced his death and resurrection. The Lord pronounced his death and resurrection. Verse 40. For as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. The sign that the Lord would give to this unbelieving generation of Israel was his own death and resurrection. The Lord only began to speak of his coming death and resurrection after he and his offer of the kingdom were rejected. Look over at Matthew chapter 16. After the Lord said that he would build his church, in verse 18, we read in verse 21, "From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and the chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised the third day." So during the early part of our Lord's ministry, he did not speak of his coming death and resurrection. His message was that the kingdom of heaven was at hand. But after his offer of the kingdom was refused, and he was rejected as Israel's Messiah and king. Then he began to speak about his coming death and resurrection. And then he began to speak of the gospel that would go out to the whole world. And then he began to speak of his worldwide church that would be built. So the Lord's coming, death, and resurrection would be a sign to unbelieving Israel that the kingdom was being taken from them. Now, the biggest question that comes up concerning this sign is the 3 days and the three nights, right? If the Lord was crucified on Good Friday, there are not 3 days and three nights between his burial on Friday afternoon and his resurrection on Sunday morning. For some Christians, this is such a problem that they move the crucifixion back to Thursday and some even to Wednesday. But this is not necessary. The phrase 3 days and three nights was a Hebrew idiom which was used to include any part of a day or a night. So part of Friday, Saturday, and part of Sunday would be called 3 days and three nights. Furthermore, the phrase the third day is used numerous times in the Gospels as the day of our Lord's resurrection. We just read one of those passages in Matthew 16, verse 21. Notice, from that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised the third day. Well, if Sunday is the third day, what's the second day? Obviously, Saturday. And if Saturday is the second day, what's the first day? Obviously, Friday. And there's no such thing as a day zero. So we believe the unbroken tradition of Good Friday is correct. The main point here, however, is that the Lord pronounced his death and resurrection. Doctrinal point number two. The Lord predicted future idolatry in Israel. The Lord predicted future idolatry in Israel. Verses 43 through 45. When an unclean spirit goes out of a man, he goes through dry places seeking rest and finds none. Then he says, I will return to my house from which I came. And when he comes, he finds it empty, swept, and put in order. Then he goes and takes with him seven other spirits more wicked than himself. And they enter and dwell there. And the last state of that man is worse than the first. So shall it also be with this wicked generation. The man here represents Israel, and the unclean spirit represents the idolatry that existed in the former kingdom of Israel. The nation of Israel was temporarily cured of its idolatry when it went into captivity at the hands of the Babylonians. From the time of the Babylonian captivity, right down until this present time, there has not been idolatry within Judaism. But the empty house of Israel refused to allow their Messiah to enter the house. And so idolatry will return to Israel in the future. In fact, the last state will be worse than the former because they will worship the Antichrist of the future. This will be idolatry in its fully developed form, represented here by the seven other spirits. The number seven here being symbolic of complete idolatry. This will take place during the future tribulation period. The good news is that we know from other scriptures that during that coming tribulation period, there will be a significant portion of the Jewish people who will turn to the Lord at that time. They will receive the Messiah they once rejected. These faithful Jews will be the saved of Israel of Romans 11, verse 26. And so all Israel will be saved. And then a quote from Isaiah. Unfortunately, the unbelievers in Israel at that time will turn to the Antichrist, the worst form of idolatry. The Lord predicted future idolatry in Israel. Doctrine point number three. The Lord proclaimed new family relationships. The Lord proclaimed new family relationships. Verses 46 through 50. While he was still talking to the multitudes, behold, his mother and brothers stood outside seeking to speak with him. Then one said to him, "Look, your mother and your brothers are standing outside seeking to speak with you." But he answered and said to the one who told him, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." Why were Mary and the Lord's half-brothers wanting to speak to the Lord at this point? Well, in the parallel account in Mark chapter 3, we read in verse 21, "But when his own people heard about this, they went out to lay hold of him, for they said, he is out of his mind." Remember, the Lord's half-brothers did not believe on him at this point, according to John chapter 7, verse 5. "For even his brothers did not believe in him." John 7, 5. They became believers later, however. In fact, James and Jude wrote the books of the New Testament that bear their names. These verses here in Matthew chapter 12 certainly prove, don't they, that Mary was not a perpetual virgin and did not occupy some special spiritual position. Otherwise, the Lord would not have said in verse 48, "Who is my mother and who are my brothers?" Mary had the wonderful privilege of being the mother of the Messiah. Now, what is the meaning of verses 49 and 50? "And he stretched out his hand toward his disciples and said, here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of my Father in heaven is my brother and sister and mother." The Lord was proclaiming here that to become a Christian and follow Christ and become part of the family of God is more important than blood relationships. Once again, here at the end of chapter 12, we see that now that Israel has rejected their king and his offer of the kingdom, the gospel will go out to everyone. The Lord proclaimed new family relationships. Now finally, practical application from this last portion of Matthew chapter 12. Watch for spiritual vacuums. Watch for spiritual vacuums. In verses 44 and 45, the unclean spirit found a spiritual vacuum and was able to easily enter with other wicked spirits. You see the practical application? Satan is looking for spiritual vacuums. When people are not in a vital relationship with the Lord, they are unfulfilled and unsatisfied and thus vulnerable to the enemy. We need to be aware of this in reference to our unsaved friends and colleagues. Watch for spiritual vacuums. These folks may have their act together. They may have their life swept and in order, verse 44. But because God has made people with a spiritual capacity, they are empty and unfulfilled if they don't have the Lord. Satan knows this and tries to fill these spiritual vacuums with all kinds of substitutes. That's why the cults and false religions are so successful. We can rescue our unsaved friends and colleagues and neighbors from terrible consequences. Watch for spiritual vacuums.